This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. Super fired up to have Justin Smith back on the show. He is the founder of Hawkeye Wealth. He's been on the show a number of times. Super analytical guy, really bright guy and great commentator on the market in general. And then we talk about real estate in Vancouver, BC, Canada, and a little bit in the United States as well. It's a great conversation.
It's a great conversation. You know, it's one of those conversations of every time I talk to Justin, I always think the same thing. Well, especially the last couple of times I've talked to him is, where can you get a return right now that looks attractive? It feels like when we were having this conversation, I don't think the stock market had dropped nearly 10% or whatever it's done at this point. And we should timestamp this. We are recording this a week before this goes out, due to spring break. But, you know, it seems like the stock market was overvalued. Investing in real estate as an individual, it's hard to make those numbers work. So where do you go to get a return? And we talk about that with Justin today, obviously, because that's the business he's in.
Yeah, and it's a great conversation. Tons of takeaways. Can't wait for this. But before we get to that, Matt, of course, we are sponsored by our real estate team, which is Scalina Real Estate in Vancouver. And this segment, which remains nameless, that's the name of the segment, is about real estate trivia, Vancouver trivia, or Vancouver real estate trivia. Matt, you got the question?
I do, Adam. This one is about Vancouver real estate. Which apartment market in Greater Vancouver was in the top five best performing markets over the last 10 years, with appreciation clocking in at 143.1%, while also being one of the worst performing markets over the last year, declining a whopping 20.1%. Now, keep in mind, Greater Vancouver, Adam, this includes anything from Vancouver to Maple Ridge to Port Coquitlam to the Sunshine Coast to Whistler, West Van, the Burnabies, East, North, and South. Let's highlight one of our listings we have right now. We have a great one in North Van you want to talk about.
Yeah, we've got so many great listings to highlight, but while you wait for me to fumble through this question, it's unit 204 at 625 East 3rd Street in North Vancouver. This is at Kindred, 2019 building. Super beautiful unit. I love this unit. It's got a fantastic
floor
plan.
Love the neighborhood too.
Oh yeah, Moodyville. It's great. So city views, water views, really bright and spacious unit, overhead ceilings. You've got floor to ceiling windows, bedrooms on both sides of the condo. So it's nice separation between the bedrooms, one parking and one storage. And this is listed for $915,000. So $915,000. And again, two bed, two bath, 900 square feet, Moodyville 2019 building. With beautiful views. So check it out at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
That's right. And while you're there, click sell with us where you can download the sold plan, our most downloaded document to date that helps all sellers get their place sold very quickly and for top dollar. So let's get back to this question, Adam. Just to remind you.
Yes.
Last 10 years, this was one of the five best performing markets, appreciation at 143%, 143.1%, I should say. Well, the last year, it has been one of the worst performing markets with a decline of 20.1%, which is dramatically higher than most markets in Greater Vancouver.
Wow, this one's tricky. I'm going to, hopefully people are playing at home that maybe have the better answer than me. This, I don't know how this market that I'm going to guess is doing right now, if it's still got a lot of traction or if it's kind of soft right now. But I know one of the markets that has had a huge run up in the last decade is Squamish. So I'm going to guess Squamish.
Very good guess. Not the answer we were looking for. I can give you the stats on Squamish, though, if you'd like.
Yes, yeah, give me the stats on Squamish just quickly.
142.5%. So
okay, almost, so I was close.
Almost as strong of a market as the one we are thinking of. In the last year, however, let me see, Squamish is down 15.8%. So you were very close.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
That was actually, you know what? I'm actually surprised at how close Squamish resembles this market. Let's put it into, maybe I'll give you one more hint for a second guess here. Squamish at 15.8% decline over the last year is the third worst performing market. The next worst performing market is at 18.4% down, and that is the Sunshine Coast. Now, keep in mind, our market, we are guessing today, is down 20.1%.
I don't know. I'm guessing it's somewhere in the valley.
No, it's Whistler, Adam.
What?
Yeah.
Whistler? I thought Whistler was doing okay. I thought
here's the interesting thing about last month's stats that I don't understand. I wasn't going to bring this up, but it does suggest there's something a little strange going on. In the last 6 months, sorry, it's only down 5.8%. In the last month, it's down over 10%.
Interesting. So,
dramatic drop recently, but yeah, it's the worst performing market over the last year in all of I was going to say the REGBV, but whatever we're calling Greater Vancouver Realtor area, I guess. That will be next week's quiz. What do you call it?
Well, anyways, Matt, why don't we cut to our conversation with Justin Smith from Hawkeye Wealth?
Absolutely. This is a fantastic conversation.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it is also making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
Adam, we want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Soane House, one of Marcon's latest communities that features a West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced, Nordic-inspired design, for architecture that endures.
Soane House offers 165 junior 1 to 3 bedroom homes in West Coquitlam, integrating nature into the built environment.
Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's marcon.ca/SOENHAUS, or visit the display center at Outpost in Port Moody.
We also want to highlight 102 and Park. With billions already invested in Surrey City's central development over the last 15 years, the time is now to invest in its future, Surrey 3.0.
Introducing 102 and Park, a simple, straightforward skyscraper featuring 376 homes. Quite simply, this is a once-in-a-decade opportunity coming soon to Surrey's central downtown plaza. This is a time and the place to invest. Register at marcon.ca/102andpark. That's marcon.ca/102andpark.
Marcon, building for life. Okay, so we're here with Justin Smith. He is the president of Hawkeye Wealth and past guest fan favorite. Thanks for coming back and joining us, Justin. Great to see you.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Thanks so much, Justin. It's an interesting moment to have you back on the show, so we're really looking forward to it. For people who haven't heard you on the show before, Justin, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. You want me to talk a little bit more about me or a little bit more about Hawkeye?
A little bit of both, maybe.
So as Adam mentioned, I'm president of Hawkeye Wealth. Hawkeye is a private real estate business. When we say private real estate, it means that we're not realtors. We don't directly sell properties. We're not involved in the public markets. What our job in the world is to find investments in the real estate business that are from third parties. So these would be mostly developers or people that are buying apartment buildings or industrial buildings where they think that there is a good risk-adjusted return. Then our job at Hawkeye is to verify those assumptions to see whether we believe it's a good risk-adjusted return as well. And if it is, we'll invite our investors on a deal-by-deal basis to invest. So we've invested in over 35 development and residential value-add projects across North America, mostly in Western Canada and the Western and Southern United States, and have been doing this since 2018. So have enjoyed a number of different markets in that time. I feel like I've lived, you know, about seven years. You guys know what the world's been the last 7 years. So some great highs and some obvious challenges in the market, and learning quite a bit as we go along. So
why real estate?
Why did I choose to get into the real estate industry?
Yeah.
I knew what I didn't want to do after I was in banking for a couple of years. So I did my undergrad in psychology. I actually thought I might become a clinical psychologist. And then I got into year two or three and it started even messing with me. And I'm like, I've got enough problems in my own life without inviting everybody else's problems into my life. So not psychology. Graduated, needed a job, so got into banking. I actually always thought tellers made a lot of money, believe it or not. You know, you
think
go to the bank.
I think anyone under 18 thinks that, right? That's like,
yeah, they don't. So I did that for a little while, paid part of my way through college, and then worked my way up after university to managing some money and mostly getting people into debt. Like, that's the part of the job that I really struggled with. I felt like I helped people not get wealthier. I felt like I spent more time selling them stuff that wasn't good for them. So I kind of felt like every day I left work and left a little piece of my soul with me there. And so that wasn't working. And so I didn't know what I wanted to do next, though. I decided to do my MBA in Vancouver. And that's when I moved here, 2009, finished that up. I honestly thought everyone was going to be banging down my door to hire me after I got my MBA. And that didn't happen. So so this was in, you're getting a long answer.
You were humbled a few times. It sounds like
you're regretting asking the question now. So in 2010, when I graduated, it was a real tough market out there, hard to find something. And it had gone long enough. I had interviewed with a few different companies, including one insurance company, where I was getting second interviews. And I think I probably could have landed that role, but it just felt like bank 2.0 to me. And so decided not to do that. At one point, I actually was applying for a volunteer position at the Museum of Vancouver. Shout out to any of your Museum of Vancouver.
I think we've had somebody from the Museum of Vancouver on the show.
Have you
honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in 2016, maybe. Gregory Dreiser, I think his name was.
I don't know if they're part of this story or not, but I had a gap in my resume. So I went to do volunteer for marketing at the Museum of Vancouver. And at that time, I was really, you know, banking on getting something. And it was an unpaid position. And I get the email saying, you know, unfortunately, we've gone in another direction. I'm thinking, man, I've dropped so much money. I've moved to Vancouver.
You know, got an MBA.
Yeah. So I ended up taking a job managing sales for and merchandising for a food company here in BC. And ironically, my salary was identical to that of my banking position, like exact same number. So again, just wasn't quite the right fit for me. And then I ended up going to an Aussie Jura conference and saw people gathered together talking about making money in real estate. I didn't know this world existed, met some great people. And from there, I ended up working with a developer, helping investors purchase pre-sale units. And I learned that I could get pretty good at that. And as I got better at it, I kept on going and led eventually to me starting Hawkeye and getting to where we are today. So it's the long answer.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, good answer. So, Justin, I think we've talked a little bit about this on the show when you were on previously, but for listeners who haven't heard or need a refresher, so the private real estate business, right, as you say, it's a bit of an area that people don't know a lot about, right? People are either thinking, I'm going to invest in real estate, I'm going to go buy a condo or a single family home or whatever and find tenants, or, you know, in a real handoff situation, they're saying, okay, maybe I'll just buy, you know, shares in a REIT. You kind of occupy a space in between. Can you talk a little bit more about that and about the value in the space you occupy?
Sure. Yeah, if you're going to do completely hands off, you're right. Like if you don't want to think anything about anything, you hand your money to a financial advisor, they'll allocate how they see fit and you do nothing. That's max passivity, right? Then you've got the do it all yourself, which is buy the apartment building, buy the industrial building, buy whatever, and you know, either you manage it yourself or you get a property manager to do it, but you're handling a lot of, even if you're not directly managing the property, there's asset management that you're doing, right? And you also have to put in a lot of work to go and find the right assets to buy, which is the most important part of the job, right? We're somewhere in between, as you were kind of alluding to, where investors are picking and choosing which investments they want to do, the ones that we're bringing to them that we've vetted. So, for example, we have a multifamily building in the Pacific Northwest that we're just finalizing right now. And I'm out talking to our investors and they can go review the deal, see if it fits with what they're looking to do and if they're liquid at the moment and can choose to participate. And so, but once you've participated, once you've invested, it's quite passive from that point on. The active part is making the decision to invest in that asset. And then after that, there's not really a lot to do except for file your annual taxes. You get a tax slip from the group that's doing the deal, managing the deal, and file that. And then you wait for the deal to exit. So if it's a development rental, you build it, you rent it, you may refinance and hold it, or you may sell it. So that's when you would get your capital back with some return, right? So where we tend to serve is the people that like to do some analysis, like they're not completely hands off. We tend to work with a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners that have pretty good business acumen and professionals and long-term investors that know quite a bit. And so it ends up being quite a collaborative process between us at Hawkeye and our investors. We have some very sophisticated investors that I can call at a moment's notice if I have questions. And so it's, like you say, somewhere between doing it all yourself and doing nothing. And ideally, you'd get the same returns by doing nothing. So if you could do nothing and get the same returns as you could by either doing it all yourself or doing some, everybody would prefer to do nothing. So the idea of private markets is that you're going after a higher risk-adjusted return. So compared to a REIT, for example, REITs need to have a certain scale to operate. And so they might need to purchase X number of industrial buildings across X number of markets in Canada or the US in order to achieve the scale necessary to be profitable. What's different about our market is you can be a little bit more niche. And so if you like industrial in the Lower Mainland or you like multifamily in Southeast Calgary, you can really pick and choose and design a portfolio that's much more tailored to your liking. And if you're good at what you do, obviously you're going after higher returns than what the REITs would be able to provide. With the downside risk being, like, the thing people have to be able to take on for risk is that there's not guaranteed liquidity on the, like a REIT, if there's liquidity in the market, you know, you buy it, you sell it, you know, the next day, no problem. If you put your money in a Hawkeye deal, you're going after higher returns, but you also have to be able to afford the illiquidity that comes with that. Like a development deal, that's a 3-year deal. It might take 4 years. Heck, it might take 5 years, right? And so that's something that investors need to be comfortable with. And so that's why we tend to work with, you know, entrepreneurs, more sophisticated investors. Generally, those kind of starting at $1, $2 million portfolio, investment portfolio size is all the way up to about $200 million is where our clients fall. Because otherwise, you're just not able to get enough diversification with what we do. Like, even if you have $1 million, the minimum check sizes for each of our deals are, you know, high enough, starting, you know, 50, 100, 150. We've had some deals even 250,000 plus minimum check sizes. So you can imagine if you've got a $200,000 minimum check size and you've only got $1 million, you might only do one or two deals before you're way too concentrated in a couple of deals, right? And so it's really about finding the right fit for both them and us.
How are the markets that you're monitoring? How's the market just in general?
We feel very differently about Canada and the US right now. Man, there are so many variables right now. There are so many variables in play, and the breadth of possible outcomes for each of those variables is very wide. And so, I mean, predicting is a very difficult business, if not a fool's errand, even in more stable markets. It's pretty close to impossible right now, which is why you need, you know, margins for error when you're doing a deal, right? We look at Canada, and we've done quite a bit here. We're in quite a few deals. The one nice part about Canada is for the deals that people have done, the market's been quite resilient. Like, it's come off some, no doubt, in the industrial or multifamily. Maybe some pockets of Alberta have held up a little bit better than others, but most of the assets have held up reasonably well. Great for stuff that you own, but it's challenging to get excited about it, to buy it. If the pricing hasn't come down much and you're not that excited about the future, then at least in the short to medium term, then it makes it a real difficult environment to do jobs. You've had a few things change since the last time I was on the show. You've had a dramatically reduced immigration target. Plus, you're at the same time, you're going to be sending a home a lot of the non-permanent residents. So let's say you're pretty close to a flat on population growth, right? And real estate and population growth is what drives pretty much every single asset class in real estate, right? We've got declining GDP. Man, I'm going to get everyone depressed here.
let's go through them.
I know. Declining GDP per capita, right? We're not really nearly as productive as we should be as a country. And that was even before the uncertainty of tariffs, right? Which has really thrown a wrench into things, because it's not that stuff's that bad. It's just a really hard environment to do business in when, you know, are there tariffs? Are there not tariffs? Are there tariffs? Tariffs on, tariffs off. It really freezes a lot of people. I've noticed on the Canadian side of the border, where it's just like, I'm going to wait till there's some more clarity here. Then you're left betting, when is that clarity going to come? And I don't know, like, we've got March 3rd, March 4th, where, you know, are the tariffs going to come on again? Most people I talk to think that's probably less likely to happen than likely to happen. But are you going to make big decisions on that? I don't know. Really tough environment to be making big decisions on. You've got interest rates, which have come down quite a bit, but purchasing decisions are made more on what the fixed borrowing rates are than the variable rates, right? And the fixed rates are more determined five-year bond rates in Canada than what the Bank of Canada is doing, right? And so those rates haven't come down enough to get anyone too excited yet, though bond yields are coming down over the last few days. We'll see what happens over the next few weeks. The rent growth has slowed dramatically, whether you're talking multifamily or industrial. But you're looking here in traditionally high growth markets like Vancouver and Toronto, and you've already got rents declining, and you've got at or near record levels of inventory still coming online at a time when you've turned off the taps on immigration growth. So if you're a developer today and you're looking to build out your apartment building, one other piece of information here too, the new buildings have much higher vacancy rates than the old buildings because of the affordability, and people just don't move out when they've got a good deal on rent. So you've got a disproportionate amount of the vacancy in the Lower Mainland, Toronto, many other markets that is in the newer units. So if you're a developer and you're doing the math on whether to proceed with a deal or not, over the last few years, a pretty typical occupancy level to use on your pro forma was 99%. Or if you were being conservative, you know, 98% with 2% vacancy, right? And I'm not only am I not sure that's not the number, it's just not the number to use anymore. Rent growth, pretty typical in our industry. You assume 3% growth per year, some even 4%. I've seen 5% rent growth per year. And we still occasionally see pro formas out there where in the lower mainland where people have built out year by year 4% rent growth in order to justify their, you know, rationalize their decision to want to move forward on a deal. And I'm not saying that there aren't believers out there that the rents are going to grow at 3, 4, 5% per year over the next year or two in BC. I am a disbeliever. I am whatever the opposite of that, right? So it's a really challenging environment right now. And there's some options to dig out of it, but the only really big one we see is dramatically reduced government fees, which make up a huge portion of the costs. Because if you're a developer building out your pro forma with flat or even some negative rent growth over the next few years, you're baking in more vacancy. Nobody's making money at today's construction costs. You're not going to. So what happens is you don't build. Things are at a standstill. And the municipalities that rely on development cost charges and all of these fees, they are going to get a large percentage of zero. We've killed the golden goose here. So it's a real tough situation for real estate in Canada. And one thing I'm very, you know, I've gone on a bit of a rant here with it, but I think lower rents in our country are a great thing. I am so devastated for the young people that are trying to make a go of it. I don't know if I would have been able to start Hawkeye, or even because before I started Hawkeye, I took 100% commission role selling those pre-sales. I don't know if I could have afforded to take that risk with rents where they are in the lower mainland today. I might have had to move somewhere else, or maybe I just would have stuck it out at the bank or an insurance company and saw a little piece of my soul leave. Maybe some of your listeners are in that situation right now. So I really empathize with them. I think rents coming down is a good thing if we continue to add supply in spite of the fact that rents are coming down. And I view, you know, government fees as one of the only ways to do that.
Do you see that as an actual option, though? Government fees coming down?
Well, the municipalities have to get their money from somewhere. Like, there's going to be some really hard decisions to make, because it's a nice thing to say, you know, they can't do it, therefore they won't. But if they don't, their fees are going to be zero because stuff isn't going to move forward, right? And so there's a rock and a hard place where some hard choices are going to have to be made. How does the federal government get involved here? We'll hopefully see an election. Hopefully, in my opinion, sooner rather than later. I'm ready to go to the polls here. We need a government right now. So we'll see what they can do. But it's a tough situation right now, and I don't think there's easy answers. But this idea that growth pays for growth, because that's the justification for these development fees, we've done a lot of research on that. In fact, we have a person on our team who was formerly a city manager and also a trained lawyer, not a current lawyer, but trained as a lawyer. And we went through the development cost charges and how those are allocated. And this idea that growth pays for growth, it sounds nice. It's easy to sell to your public. It allows you to keep your property taxes low. But growth has paid for much more than growth. Growth has been subsidizing all of us for quite some time now, and it's just not sustainable. So I don't have the easy answers, man. I don't have the easy answers, but that's the challenge in Canada. And maybe if we want to have, we're actually much more optimistic about the U.S. I don't know if I can talk about the U.S. without talking about Trump and getting into a negative conversation again, but like the policy in the U.S., we're quite excited about the real estate market down there.
So before we get there, Justin, I feel like if you were going to kind of put the negativity, there's some economic kind of certainties in Canada that are not great. And then there's some uncertainty that you kind of highlighted at the start. I'm kind of curious to hear you, how you're thinking through kind of the uncertainty. But before we get to that, are there places in Canada that you're a little bit more bullish on? That are there bright spots, or is what the picture you just painted?
There's a difference between brighter, as in relatively brighter than other markets, and bright. I haven't found a market that I'm excited about in Canada at all. And so, I don't know, for us, the question at Hawkeye is, do we just do the best deal available at a given time? within Canada, or do deals and markets have to meet a certain standard? And our approach has always been they have to meet a certain standard. So whereas a normal year for Hawkeye, we might work with our investors to invest in, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 projects. The last 3 years, it's been 2 projects a year. So this year, we're doing one. We might do another one in the U.S. It's possible. The deal just has to make up for your lack of excitement about the future of the market. And so if the deal gets good enough and you're paying a low enough price, it's not like if someone were to show me an apartment building in Vancouver and sell it to me at a 7 or 8 cap, I wouldn't, you know, go raise the money tomorrow to go do it, right? It just hasn't happened in Canada. The pricing hasn't, in my opinion, come down enough to reflect the new reality, which is why you're seeing fewer transactions happening. So that could pick up a little bit as interest rates come down. And be clear, I'm actually quite excited about the long-term potential for Canada. Like, we're in a pretty incredible place. I love living here. We've got immense amount of resources. We're highly educated. We've got a relatively stable government. I know some people might laugh when I say that, but you know, you compare it to the world. We've got a pretty stable government and we have pretty good rule of law compared to a lot of places in the world. I think one of our great attributes as Canadians too is we're, I'd say, a generally trustworthy people. I hear frauds and these things in this industry on occasion. I don't think most people are out there to do fraud. Like, we've got a generally very great environment to do business, right? So, you know, if we can get the oil and the LNG going, start getting the uranium going, the potash, the gold, the silver, the water, the electricity, we produce immense amounts of electricity through hydro, right? We've got cold weather. The cold weather's a boon for the LNG industry, where you have to cool it down to something like minus 160 degrees or so to ship it off to Asia. Well, it's already pretty cold when it gets to the liquefaction plant, so that saves a lot of money, right? And we're close to Asia. The data centers, they need cooling, so you'll see data centers pop up in cooler markets. So the part that I'm really excited about is we have immense potential. Am I a little sad that we haven't lived up to that potential for, you know, quite some time? Sure, I am. But I'd rather have potential than not, right? And so I think there's a pretty good chance that, given all of the adversity that Canada's faced, that it increases the probabilities that we start to unlock some of that potential. And just a quick story on that. Like, I mentioned that we're raising for a deal down in the U.S. right now, and it's gone pretty well. You've always got the classic, you know, going to wait this one out or don't like Trump and you know, the usuals for people saying no to deals right now. But this is going to be probably the second largest raise we've ever done. So we've had a lot of yeses too. You know, people like to think nobody does anything in the US anymore. That's just not true. So I was actually quite concerned though, because I started raising for this deal in kind of mid-January, and I had a lot. I probably had about 15 or so people committed to, or at least verbally committed. They'd given me a number, say, Justin, yeah, I'm in for this amount of money. And a couple of weeks later, the Trump rhetoric just ratcheted up, right? He's like, yeah, 25% tariffs are coming. You probably remember, you know, that weekend at the end of January where he's, you know, going hard on all of the, you know, all the 51st state stuff, and the 25% tariffs, and it kind of got real really fast for a lot of Canadians booing at the anthems, like, and I was just thinking, first of all, what does this mean for our deal? Like, is this still a good idea to proceed with the deal? Because that's always our top objective at Hawkeye, right? Like, has anything materially changed over the last weekend that would stop us from doing the deal? We concluded that the answer was no. I think that this deal is still quite attractive. My second concern was, on Monday, am I going to get a bunch of calls from 15 or 20 investors saying, Justin, I'm out? Like, I'd worked really hard to go and raise this capital. And literally over the weekend, I didn't get one call or email from a concerned client saying that they wanted to come out of the deal. And so I thought it was a little bit weird. I was like, not even Like, what are they thinking over there? Is everyone out? They just haven't told me yet. So what are these 15, 20 people thinking, right? And so I started calling, and virtually every single conversation focused on Canada and what led us to this point and what we need to do to improve the situation in our own country. Every single one. And these are very successful people. These are all millionaires, business owners. And I think that's the right approach. Like, you can go and try and complain about what someone's doing south of the border, or you can get your own house in order. And thankfully, I think, fingers crossed, that's what we do here in Canada, because we've got immense potential. And I think that the chances that we realize it have gone up significantly over the past few months. So just to, you know, to make it so, you know, we're not all depressed about our country, I think long term we're still quite bullish on Canada. It just the short term here and maybe even, you know, over the next year or two, we're not quite as optimistic about the metrics that will be coming out.
Hey everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible. This podcast is sponsored by Fenway by Caliber, bringing 209 new homes and 24,000 square feet of retail space to Willoughby Town Center.
And this retail component isn't just adding to the area, Adam. It's enhancing an already thriving community hub where neighbors connect over boutique shopping, great food, and everyday essentials. This is one of the final new construction opportunities to own in the heart of Langley's Willoughby Town Center.
And speaking of Langley, is it me or is Langley all you hear about these days? It's become such a powerhouse with over 7,000 businesses, the population set to double by 2040, and that SkyTrain extension arriving in 2029.
What's incredible about this location is that you're getting the best of everything. Your steps from the Langley Event Center, currently undergoing a massive $149 million expansion. The new Tennis Center and future Willoughby Community Center are right across the street. Plus, you've got the new Smith Athletic Park just down the road.
The location really is unbeatable, with 8 schools within walking distance and just minutes from Highway 1. And what I love is that this is a Caliber project. They're Langley locals with decades of experience who really understand this community. They've partnered with Polyco Group to bring decades of development expertise to Fenway.
With Langley's population set to double and transit connectivity expanding, this is your chance to be part of BC's fastest growing community. Register at fenwayliving.com. That's FENWAY living.com.
Fenway, where small town heart meets urban sophistication.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join. Type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
What about the US dollar, Justin? How has that impacted your take on investing in the US?
How do you feel about the Canadian dollar?
Not great.
Well, it's like people ask the question, but if you're saying that I am not going to buy the US dollar, I'm not going to exchange my Canadian dollar for a US dollar at whatever the rate is, let's say it's $1.43 Canadian for a US dollar right now, it's a de facto vote for the Canadian dollar. Doing nothing is a decision. Makes me laugh a little bit, because there's a big concern about making this change to the USD, but not that same concern about holding a currency that I think we have a lot of reason to be concerned about. So what I would say is it becomes on each investor, I think it's important to be a bit diversified. I don't know what's going to happen with the Canadian US dollar. It's a crapshoot to call, but I do think it is important to have some currency diversification. And if you put some money into the US dollar and over the next few years, you're in a deal and it exits and, you know, we're down at $1.35 versus $1.43 or wherever at, it doesn't make that much of a difference if the deal is good enough. And if you don't want to convert back, it's not like there's not lots of opportunity in the US. However, it is probably the number one concern that we have voiced when we're raising capital in the US right now, is people that are hold more Canadian dollars are concerned about converting to US dollars. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that decision for a lot of them, but each investor makes their own choice. I'll personally invest in the deal and happily convert some Canadian dollars to US dollars for it. And then one last point here, because I think it's interesting. So that same weekend at the end of January, when everything was going down, the US dollar peaked out at just, I think it was just under $1.48 Canadian. Like if you guys were watching it, it skyrocketed that weekend. Essentially, the same thing's happening right now. We've got the new deadline, March 4th or whatever it is. And the US dollar has kind of crept back up again. But I don't think the markets are taking it quite as seriously this time as they did last time. So I think what the markets are essentially saying is they think there's a lower probability that Trump is going to follow through on his threat of the 25% tariffs. Because the way this works is when Trump adds the tariffs, that increases the chances of inflation in the US, that increases their bond rates. And it in Canada, yes, it adds some inflation, but it also tanks our economy by a much larger degree than it happens in the US. So what happens is our bond rates drop. And with our dropping bond rates, it's because they're betting on interest rates coming down. If interest rates come down in Canada, but they don't come down in the US, that weighs on our dollar, right? And so if people stop believing that Trump's going to impose these tariffs, this just doesn't play out the same way. So it seems to be this time that they're already betting on him not following through with it. But I'd want to be making decisions where I'm comfortable whether he does or he doesn't.
I love that idea of the not, you know, how do you feel about the Canadian dollar? Because I mean, that's the best way to possibly put it. Like, what do you feel like the dollar is going to be in, call it 6 months, a year, right? And I think the other question then, the reverse of that is with the Canadian dollar where it's at, you know, it used to be the case that, you know, Vancouver would go on sale for people or Canada would go on sale for people and we'd see investment just on the fact that our dollar was weak.
Yeah, 2014.
Do you see that? Do you see that? I mean, obviously when we're talking about residential real estate, that's not really an option anymore. But when we're talking about maybe commercial real estate or other asset classes, do you see that happening? And I guess, can you talk about that? Like, does that suggest a good news story or a bad news story? Because you don't want to get your dollar so weak just to get investments in Canada, but it looks like that's maybe what it might take.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's an interesting point because even with the tariffs in the US and your Canadian dollar goes way down, your importers from the US will have such a strong dollar that it makes up for a lot of the tariffs. And so none of these things move in a vacuum, right? And I can't say that I've spent, you know, a huge portion of my life contemplating how all of these different pieces impact each other. But as for real estate, I've heard at least anecdotally that the ski hills have a lot of Americans on them.
Yep.
So the tourism sector, and especially those that historically have catered to quite a few Americans, I imagine that there could be some boon there, or hospitality, the hotel sector, there could be some benefits there from a stronger US dollar. There's going to be winners or losers in every situation, right? I mean, even looked at COVID and that line, office was the big loser, right? From COVID, retail, a quasi loser, which is actually coming back into favor right now, a lot more of the retail, with industrial and multifamily being winners. So there will be some opportunity. There will be some opportunity, no doubt, through it. And I view a few other big potential changes, too, that are going to create some opportunities, or at least over the next 5-10 years that I think aren't on a lot of people's radar, if you wanted me to cover some of those.
Yeah. Just before we get, I just wanted to kind of, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately, specifically with like industrial and businesses. And do you think like, because I mean, markets really react poorly to uncertainty. And we're in this situation where I think business owners don't know if their business next year is going to be growing or shrinking dramatically. And it's contingent on just not knowing. But I mean, I feel like, you know, what's it going to take to start getting to a better place? And maybe it's even just knowing if the tariffs are going to move forward. Because I feel like right now we're in the purgatory moment of just like, how does it shake out, right?
For the Canadian side, because on the US side, it, you know, as much as I'm a proud Canadian, we can do some damage with retaliating with tariffs, but it's not even close to the damage they can do us. And so certainly it's a big concern, particularly on the industrial market. And yeah, you're bang on. There was one other point here, Adam, if you can reframe the question here, there was another point that I wanted to make that I've forgotten here.
Yeah, well, I guess the origin of the question really is with the uncertainty and with, you know, not only the uncertainty of industrial space and where businesses are in Canada with the potential of the tariffs, but also what it takes maybe for money to flow back into Canada if the Canadian dollar continues to drop and the US dollar gets stronger.
It's a challenge, no doubt, if you're a business owner and you're deciding on how much space to take up and which side of the border you're going to get that space. It's a challenging decision right now. And I think it really comes down to one of two things. Either we get a resolution, right? Like we ultimately find out what he wants. Is it to renegotiate dairy or you know, and a few other items on our trade agreement? Or is it something else? And we ultimately find out what it is, sign the agreement, the rhetoric ratchets down, and there's enough stability for people to start making decisions again. Or the alternative, which is suboptimal, but could kind of get you into the same place eventually, is if the threat of tariffs is just kind of always there, it just becomes your new normal. And it almost becomes a crying wolf situation. You know, if every month, you know, there's going to be a 25% tariff and then it doesn't happen, how many months does that have to happen before you just say, it's not going to happen? Once investors and business owners believe that it's just not going to happen because, and they believe it's a crying wolf situation, you could get into a situation where people feel more comfortable making decisions. Of course, a final resolution would be preferable for everyone.
You know, it's funny that you said that because I made that same point to someone this morning over coffee. It reminds me also of like this age of uncertainty that we're in, where you think about like every 3 or 4 weeks, there's something, there's almost like a new black swan event, right? Like it's like a new thing you have to be concerned about. Like I wasn't thinking about tariffs 6 months ago, but I was thinking about something else that was dramatic and impacting the market that everybody was talking about.
After the California, after insurance Los Angeles burned or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it is, there's something now that could put people to the sidelines. And do we get to a place where people are comfortable with being uncomfortable? They're like, well, it's the world's a crazy place and things change on a dime here all the time.
People
got to
put their money somewhere. I was just talking to a 30-year development veteran, and we were talking about almost this exact same topic, Adam. Like just the headwinds and the challenges in the market, and like the elder statesman he is, he's like, Justin, I've seen people fall in love with real estate. I've seen people fall out of love with real estate. I've seen people fall in love with the stock market. I've seen people fall out of love with the stock market. And I'll add to that one. Before 2022, I'd never seen somebody in love with GICs. I can't say that anymore.
Yeah.
I've seen people fall in love with GICs. And I think we're about to see some people fall out of love with GICs. And when those GICs mature, you know, they were getting their 5 point whatever percent they were getting. What are you renewing at today? It probably starts with a 3, right? And it seems like it's still trending downwards. That money has a choice to make. If you would have asked me a few weeks ago, the stock market seemed to be the place of choice for most investors to go and get a return if they weren't going to renew their GIC at the 3%. But even then, like in the US, there's been a lot of volatility and some downward momentum recently. So if you're, you know, if you've got the GIC or you've got some liquidity that comes up, where's the next place to put it? You know, might it be time to fall in love a little bit more with real estate again? I don't know. The money's got to go somewhere.
Here's one of the things that we haven't really covered yet, Justin, and maybe it's a good time to talk about the US, because falling in love with real estate, if I'm following the logic of the conversation thus far, requires a fairly attractive price point, and we haven't seen prices come off in Canada. But my understanding is, at least with this deal you're raising for right now, curiously enough, in a booming economy in the US, you're finding really attractive deals. Can you tell us a little bit about the difference in the market that way. And then, and then maybe even just a little bit about this deal, just so people get an idea of what kind of deals you're looking at.
Yeah. So it's a strong economy. I'd say a booming market, but the booming market has been more as it relates to the stock market than the real estate market. The real estate market in this higher rate environment has actually seen carnage over the past few years, particularly in the multifamily space. And speaking of assets that people fell in love with and fell out of love with, the love was pretty strong all the way from 2011 to about late 2021, early 22. And the love stopped pretty quick once those interest rates started moving up and the pricing had also moved up quite high, and everything was trading at what they call a low cap rate, which means the prices were pretty high relative to the income that each building produced. And the pricing reflects that carnage. Why do we like the US? Well, if the pricing reflects the fact that people aren't bullish on it, that's where the opportunity really comes, right? And so why are we optimistic? Well, the supply is really coming off. Everyone was doing the same math in the US that we were doing, that people are doing here in Canada now. They're saying, hey, the costs are coming in higher. The borrowing costs are doing higher. We can't build a new multifamily building and be profitable in the vast majority of circumstances now. So what you're seeing in the US is for the last year or so, the new starts have really stopped and you see supply dropping off a cliff in a lot of different markets. And so you're seeing that. At the same time, you're seeing the inventory that has completed. The deal that we're doing now is in Metro Portland. The rents are starting to come up again after softening, you know, coming off a few percent in maybe for a year, year and a half, they're starting to trend up again. So you have a situation where the rents are trending up. You've got the very little new supply coming on for the foreseeable future. You've got a pretty strong economy. And if you put your politics aside, because I have my own concerns about their politics and the way they're going about things, especially as a proud Canadian, I think they're implementing some policy that will drive growth. Like, it's not just that if you have a choice as a Canadian to put your next factory in Canada or US because of the tariffs, if they dramatically reduce their taxes, it might not even be because of the tariffs. It might just be because it makes more business sense to put your money in the US. So you've seen trillions of dollars of new commitments of capital investing in the US. And so if you cut through a lot of the noise, I still think that there's some brand damage to the US through this process. So I don't think it's all good. But if you cut through the noise, there's a lot of good stuff that's happening right now. And anybody that thinks that their $2 trillion a year deficit is a good thing, and you may have qualms about how Doge is going about it. I do too. But the status quo is not working. And it's not working in Canada either. We can sit here and live like we can continue to rack up debt like we're never going to have to pay for it, but that's not the real world, right? And so we've got pricing that reflects the carnage. We've got a future that we feel better about. We've got a population that is more productive and can afford the higher rents, and less regulation in the space as well. Like, Metro Portland is considered to be have some rent, more rent controls than, for example, Texas, which has no rent controls, right? You know what the rent controls are in Portland? Inflation plus 7% or 10%, whichever is lower, is your rent growth cap.
Sounds like the Wild West.
A little bit more than...
Well, yeah. It's like, it's a non-factor most years. And so people have fallen out of love with it. And so the biggest challenge is you've got people that have been burned over the past number of years. And when you've been burned, it's tough to jump back in. It's really tough emotionally and psychologically. We've avoided a lot of the damage in multifamily in the US, but we were down there and held some assets that struggled as well, right? And so emotionally, it's tough for me to get up and say, yeah, let's do this. That's a challenge, but I do think it's the better choice.
So Justin, just circling back here, you kind of alluded to this before, but we always think of you as a forward thinker. And I know you think deeply about the real estate landscape in North America. Are there things that you're kind of thinking about right now that are potentially having major impacts on real estate markets in general over the next 5, 10, 15 years that not a lot of people are talking about?
I think there's some really big ones, and I don't know exactly what they're impact is going to be or where the opportunity arises from that impact, but I'm confident that it's going to change the landscape and that there will be winners and losers in these changes. One that I spend a lot of time thinking about and just is a personal interest of mine is self-driving cars. If you're following it here, it's more active in the US, but you've got Waymo that's launched in a couple of cities and starting to more aggressively expand. You've got Tesla, which, love or hate Elon, they're expecting to launch their robotaxi service June 1 in Austin. And the ramp of how many cities they can expand to quickly is very high. So is Elon actually going to accomplish this by June 1? It's hard to say, right? But do I feel pretty confident that this is coming in the next 2, 3, 4 years? Yeah, I would make some pretty big bets that in the next 2, 3, 4 years, you're going to be able to hop in your car and it's going to be able to drive you anywhere in the vast majority of circumstances. So, you know, what does that mean for real estate? Well, it means a lot for how many parking stalls you need in a development, right? It means a lot for parking structures that you have downtown and highly desirable locations. It means a lot for commuters that currently have unproductive time on their commutes that can turn that into productive time. And so what does that all mean? Does that make certain areas more desirable to live and certain other areas less? What does that mean for, it used to be a no-brainer to own a condo by the SkyTrain station. Maybe it still is. I just don't know. Like there's going to be a lot of changes to real estate due to cars being able to drive themselves. You know, if you've got less traffic and what used to take you an hour now takes you half an hour, are you okay moving a bit farther out, you know, into the burbs? I'm not saying that's going to happen. This isn't a prediction game here. It's just something I spend quite a bit of time thinking about, that if you're forward thinking, you should be considering how this is going to impact any particular site as a developer or even investors. It's hard to know. It's hard to know how you would underwrite differently if this happens, but just I think it's worth spending some time thinking about. Embodied AI. I don't know if that term means anything to you, but everyone's familiar with ChatGPT, maybe Grok or Gemini, Google's assistant. You know, I'm sure many of your listeners have plugged lots of different stuff into those large language models and used them. If you haven't, you should, because it's a lot of fun. I use it at least a few times a week, if not more at this stage of my life, and it's adding real value to my life, whether it's rewriting emails to fix grammatical errors or spelling mistakes, or just polishing up the language, or it can create images for you if that's handy. There's just lots of different things it can do, but it can't interact with the physical world. And that's where the embodied AI comes in. This is the walking robots.
They're finally here.
They are. And I'm surprised. This kind of stuff gets me going. I've got one client in particular that I always call to talk about robots because he likes to talk about robots as much as I do. So I apologize.
He might be
in my
office.
If I'm talking to a large audience of people that don't care about robots. My thought and my personal view is they are dramatically going to change everything. And it's not just this one just isn't just real estate. What is the impact, potentially deflationary impact, when you replace humans with robots? And Tesla is involved in making the humanoids as well with their Optimus bots. You've got other companies like Figure AI. You've got numerous Chinese companies building the robots as well. Figure AI has a deal with BMW, I believe, right now to send robots to their factories to start doing real work. The Optimus robots in Tesla's factory are going to be doing real work this year, and they're collecting data on their and they're learning. Figure AI just put out a video of their robots working together to put items that were on a counter in front of them into a fridge. And the instruction wasn't to say, hey, put this lemon in the fridge. It was, look at the items ahead of you and put them where you think they belong based in the context that you're in. Those aren't exact words, but something along those lines.
Something very human.
And so, you know, they're starting to do these things now. And the impact, I don't know, what does it mean for the construction industry, right? Because what the economy functionally is the number of people times the productivity of each of those people gives you your GDP, right? Well, the robots, you know, at first, maybe they're not as productive as a human, but they get better very quickly. So let's say they get even as good of a human, but you're not limited on the number of robots you have. You can only make humans as fast as we're having babies, which we're not really doing. We're not really doing much of these days. So you get a situation where these robots are able to produce immense value, but then you can multiply them. Like you can have many, 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 many millions of these. And so if you don't think that these are coming in the next 10 years, I think you're going to be dead wrong and shocked by the changes that this makes to real estate and everything else. And I think that's, out of everything, I think that's the biggest one that's going to change society. What does that mean for the real estate industry? I my brain starts to hurt when I think about it. It's very challenging to factor this into your decision making because it touches everything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, then you've got the other classics. You've got declining fertility rates, right? This one here, it just keeps me up at night a little bit. Like, we don't have babies to the degree that we used to, and babies are what fill real estate. And so whether this is a problem now or a problem down the road, it's demographics is going to be a problem. So if you view the population of the world as eventually a shrinking pie, if the places that are having more babies aren't compensating for the developed countries that are having fewer babies, then you've got a shrinking population pie that take up cumulatively less real estate. And then the game becomes, how do you make sure that you're getting as much of the pie as possible, which is where immigration comes in. I guess we're fortunate to live in Canada where, you know, hopefully you can get a larger share of that pie. I think about that regularly. The insurance costs, you guys have alluded to it. I don't think we've seen anything yet. I think over the next 5-10 years, you got to underwrite more aggressively on how much insurance is going to cost you. It used to be that everything on your expenses, on your expense line items, you'd use 2-3% inflation on your expenses. Mm-hmm. I think it makes a lot more sense to underwrite insurance separately, give it its own line item right now, and inflate it at a different number. Talk to your insurance broker to choose what you think the best number there would be.
Sounds like it's not 2-3% though.
No, it's not. I mean, so I just renewed. I have a property up in Northeast BC in Dawson Creek. I just paid I was just talking to my wife about it yesterday, the day before. We just paid our insurance. It was $3,000 for a probably $450,000 place.
Yeah.
And this same place, I remember vividly that, because I thought it was expensive at the time, was $100 a month for coverage. And this would have been in 2016. So we've gone from $1,200 a year to $3,000 a year over the course of 9 years. And so I'm not, you've maybe got a quicker math brain on what the cumulative annual growth rate of that expense is, but I can tell you it's not 2%.
Yeah, we both came to that conclusion.
Yeah. So I don't, again, there's opportunity in these changes, and I don't mean it to be like a bad thing. There's going to be so much money made over the next 5-10 years if you can get on the winning side of some of these changes. And so, you know, if I had the crystal ball, I wouldn't mind sharing it with the audience. I don't have it, but these are definitely things that are always in the background of my head and we're paying attention to.
Well, fantastic. Good food for thought there at the end, Justin, but maybe we'll leave it there. We do have a segment, of course, called the Five Wire. I think the questions have changed ever so slightly since you've been on. Do you have time to stick around for that?
Sure. Sounds good.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform.
Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark.
Okay, question number one. If you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say?
Be nice saying that because I just read the comments section on on a YouTube video.
Oh, God.
And it was just, I shouldn't have done that here.
Oh,
really.
One of your videos? Or
not on mine, just on somebody else's.
Definitely don't do that.
And this person is divisive. And the amount of hate on there, it's like, man, what a waste of everybody's energy. Most stuff really doesn't matter as much as you're making it sound like. So just chill. Maybe that's a better word. Just chill. Everybody needs to calm down. Come on now.
Yeah, no kidding. Second question for you, Justin. One book everyone should read.
I really enjoyed The Psychology of Money. That was a recent read. You might have had that one.
I don't know if we have had it, but I enjoyed that book too. I actually listened to that book maybe about 8 months ago or something like that. And it's like one of those books that is, it's hard to point to anything new about it, but it's still it's just an enjoyable, like good, you know, repeating things you kind of know just as like, okay, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, it's principle-based, which I always enjoy. Usually I try not to read too many new books because I like books that have stood the test of time.
Right.
Because then you know they're principle-based. They're not just, you know, fads of the day. Yeah, I did read Psychology of Money and I think it will stand the test of time. I think it'll be popular 50 years from now.
Fantastic. We've kind of covered this, a strongly held belief about real estate that's completely changed for you over the last couple of years.
Things can change quickly for the worse, and things can change quickly for the better. And I try and constantly remind myself about this because it's really easy when you're in an environment like this where there's reasons to be pessimistic. It's really easy to think you'd fall in that trap that it's going to stay this way for a long time, and things can change very quickly. And we are very good at remembering that things can get bad fast. But I right now, it just feels like people are stuck believing that things can never get better. And I think it's to their detriment. Things can change quick. Keep your chin up.
I like it. That's a great one. What's the most expensive business mistake you've made and what did it teach you?
I spent the first about 4 or 5 years of my career helping investors purchase properties in Fort St. John and Dawson Creek. And the thinking at the time was you're going there for cash flow, and cash flow is certainly a good thing. I drank the Kool-Aid pretty hard. So I'd just gotten out of school. And like I mentioned, I'd left my other job to get into real estate. And man, did I drink the Kool-Aid hard. Like, I knew exactly what was going to happen. I knew how many LNG plants were going to get approved. I knew what was going to happen with rents. You think you know. And I like to joke with clients now, because if you haven't invested in Fort St. John and Dawson Creek, you wouldn't know. But I joke now that I've managed to find the only couple markets in BC that haven't managed to appreciate over the last decade. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm really grateful for that, because when you get overconfident, you need to take a step back and just leave more room for margin of error. You can be wrong. And in fact, the more confident I hear people are in a certain outcome, especially if they're always sounding confident, I just tend to tune those people out. So I'm very grateful that I learned this early on in my career. And on the one hand, would I rather not have 3 properties that take money from me every month to this day? It just as a nice little reminder that I don't know everything. I think that the upside of those lessons, especially early on in my career, are something that I can take with me and make much better decisions moving forward.
Another good one. The final question for you here, Justin. If you couldn't work in real estate, I should say, what industry would you choose?
I would make food for people, and not to make money, because most people that make food don't make money.
You're right.
I would do 2 things specifically. I would smoke meat for people and make ice cream. Those are my 2 favorite things to make. So,
wow, that was a quick one and a very interesting one. That's great. So, Justin, somebody out there is wondering about this deal in Portland or wants to you know, find out more about what you guys are doing at Hawkeye, or wants to follow you on LinkedIn, or I know you produce an annual letter that I've enjoyed, how can people find out more about what you're doing over at Hawkeye and, yeah, about what you're doing?
People can do a few different things. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn and send me a note, my name's Justin Smith. And if you type in Justin Smith Hawkeye, that's probably going to get you farther than just typing in Justin Smith. If you want to go and to our website and check things out there as well, that's hawkeyewealth.com. And we've got the contact us there. Or if you'd like to check some of the content we've created over the years, because we do a monthly newsletter as well, you can click on the Insights tab and subscribe to our newsletter there. Usually with deals, so you'd appreciate it if you reach out directly to me or somebody else on our team. So if you want to send us a direct message on LinkedIn or let us know that you'd be interested in learning more through the contact us function on the website, we can have a conversation and see if it makes sense to do something together.
Fantastic. As always, Justin, great conversation and thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Take care.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Hawkeye founder and all-around great guy, Justin Smith.
Yeah, really awesome having Justin back on the show. Always great to get his insight. And he's always looking for deals. He's a deal finder, hence the name Hawkeye Wealth. It's a nice reminder that there are more passive ways to invest in real estate. So if you're feeling fearful about something like, you know, the current state of the Residential Tenancy Act, and you don't want to necessarily be a landlord in this market, you know, there are options for you. And Justin might be the person to talk to.
Yeah, he also had some really interesting thoughts on how technology is going to impact our market in the coming years. A little bit down, I would say, but I think everybody's feeling that way right now. We're in tough, uncertain times. So it's still super insightful. Great conversation. And he's a great storyteller as well.
And Matt, maybe we'll cut for the day. But before we do, of course, we've got our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Remind people what you can find there.
Absolutely. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for all things real estate related. Of course, we have the entire back catalog of our show, which has been running almost 10 years. I think we prematurely celebrated our decade in existence a couple weeks back.
Right.
Almost 10 years, 2016. So if you want a running history of Vancouver real estate, we got you covered. We also have things like the Live Wire. This is our weekly mailer where you can find VIP access to pre-sales, stats, different types of stats, dig into sales ratios. We also, of course, have a button that has buy with us on it. And you hit buy with us and you can sign up for tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And it's such an interesting time in the market to be monitoring. And what better way to look for new listings, price changes, sold prices, than watching at your dashboard? It's really a dashboard.
It's really a dashboard that's updating in real time.
It's unbelievable, and it's the way that we monitor new listings. So if you want to set up your own PCS account, get in touch. You can click buy with us at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And Matt, if anyone wants to talk about that or anything else with you, how can they get in touch with you directly?
Yeah, give me a call at any time, 778-847-2854 or Matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we have that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
2000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.